As humans, there's a burning question we're always asking ourselves. How did we get to where we are today with our technology? Were there beings in ancient history who helped humans civilize themselves? Were they extraterrestrials that shows like Ancient Aliens assert, or were they instead extra-dimensional beings from other dimensions? How do the records of these beings in history corroborate their existence, and where can we find them? Today, we're going to discuss a specific anomaly found in the Southeast Asia area of our world that stretches as far back as recorded history. The Nagas. These serpent-like beings, half-human, half-serpent, can be found in and on temples all over India, Sri Lanka, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, and more. Join me, investigative researcher Rob Counts, and remote viewer John Favanko for a show that's going to be out of this world. I'm looking forward to this one. It kind of gets into the nitty-gritty here on a very strange race of I don't know what. There's a lot of confusion around these beings. Some people think they are snake-like. You hear snakes being mentioned in India. There's been snake-like cults all around the world, which have been worshipped for different reasons. And then you have, you have people being like, hey, or saying that this Naga race is not snake-like at all. It's a serpent-like being that just is a different species. Why are we bringing this up? Well, it's a very strange phenomena that in all of these temples, talking about a massive part of the world here, all of Asia, in fact, where we have recorded history of things that are called Nagas in almost every single one of those cultures, they are actually called something very similar. What are these things? Are they, right. They look like humanoids. People say they're shapeshifters, which would then allude to this like David Icke type of reptilian being that shapeshifts potentially, or was it something else?
I don't even know. I don't even know where I would begin with something like this. So I think really you just need to start talking about some of the stuff that we've dug up here, because like what we're going to talk about is going to go back to this sort of like collision between mythology in ancient text and reality. And that's where it literally all begins, in the collision between those two. And what we interpret today as mythology isn't necessarily a myth.
Which I think can be said for, as you and I have, done over 100 podcasts on this show, we've discovered that most of the things that get recorded in ancient history are more likely to be accurate than they are to be myth.
All throughout ancient cultures, it's like there are these references to gods. You get to the Greek culture, you get to Nordic cultures, you get to any culture that references to gods and all of these other types of deities and things, right? And as we go what seems to be forward in time, those things go away. Right? They go away. But yet when you go back to those texts, they get so descriptive. They're a little too descriptive. We stopped doing that at a certain point of time. And it probably occurred in every culture throughout history.
Well, and I think as cultures deteriorate too, these weird cobra worship, snake worship cults have really confused a lot of these things as well. People don't really understand this, but if you go down the possession rabbit hole deep enough and you really look at cross-cultural examples of possession, what's really going on, you find animal spirits behind a lot of this stuff. Foxes, ghosts, weasels, snakes, like different things are getting into and controlling humans. And then you have, people like Jesus appearing being like, hey, don't do that. And we're going to be going through this in this episode, but you've got even in Far Eastern cultures, you have examples of, I guess you would call them cryptids that just don't exist in the West, like dragons at the bottom of some of these lakes. And when we say dragons, we're not talking about Western dragons. We're talking about something wholly different that only exists really in the Asian culture. And, some of the details on these Nagas are really interesting. We're going to go through some of those right now for those of you at home. These are not snakes. They're not humans. They look like humanoids, but could shapeshift. We mentioned that earlier. reports are that these things never really lived on the surface of the Earth. They were always living underground or underwater. These are commonly believed to center around Southeast Asia, where the culture and memory of them is strong. But versions of this thing have been found as far as Peru. Some link the Serpent Mound in Ohio as an example of this. Mayan culture had a lot of examples of weird snake-like things.
Look at Quetzalcoatl. The culture that produced the snake mound most likely was related to all of that, right? Was related, and the culture moved downward. So, possibly.
Praveen Mohan is a pretty good resource on this for you guys at home if you want to look into this a little bit more. He was, on one interview I watched with him, he was saying that Israeli culture also has a version of this, and it's there in that culture. It's called the Nakash. Examples of serpents in the Bible, which may or may not be related. Was it a snake? Was it something else? You know,
we got the seraphim, right? Which translates as fiery flying serpent.
The seraphim. Yep. And we have this idea that spans across these cultures that these Naga, the Naga race, the Nagas and the Naginis, that's the woman form, they were very knowledgeable and passed down information to human beings. The Cambodia, for instance, it is known locally that the first rulers were Nagas, the first kings, the first, you know, whatever you want to say. There are temples, Hindu temples in Cambodia, and it is said that there, the first queen of Cambodia was named Soma, and this woman descended from the Nagas and married a human. And right. Nagas, I mean, we're talking right. about Nagas being in every temple right. in this area, regardless of God, regardless of, you know, whomever these people are worshiping, Vishnu, you know, whoever. You've got Nagas in these temples.
A lot of the ancient cultures, when they reference the dragon, there's a link to the dragon bringing agriculture and technology. So again, you have this thing like the Nagas where you've got some different type of being bringing in some other aspect of culture or a higher aspect of culture.
In Greece, there is a record from Herodotus, who was considered the first historian. We've talked about Herodotus multiple times on the show because there's very, very bizarre things in this man's account of the world at the time when he, you know, was traveling around and trying to record everything. An account of the great serpent which defended the citadel of Athens. The Roman genius, I don't know if this is pronounced, it's L-O-C-I, so Loki, took the form of a serpent. A snake was kept and fed with milk during rites dedicated to Patrimpus, a Prussian god. The oracles of the ancient Greeks were said to have been the continuation of the tradition begun with the worship of the Egyptian cobra goddess, Wajit.
Wow.
Oh, loaded stuff there.
Yeah, that's really loaded. There's a festival on the Mekong River in Thailand, a Buddhist festival, where it's said that the Naga shoots fireballs right out of the water. This like takes it into the dragon realm. This is pointing us to, is taking us down that path of dragons, right? That's so curious to me.
Yes, it is. And the for those of you at home, the Mekong River that John just referenced is probably one of the strongest referenced regarding the Naga that is around right now. I mean, we've got this river reportedly is where at least one lives. It is unlikely that this thing exists, whatever it is, in this dimension, because the Nagas are known to kind of be some of these creatures that exist neither here nor there or both, or can go between these dimensions. And a lot of it's unclear where they really are. But excuse me if I'm going to butcher this. Valiam Parai Caves, which are about 4,000 years old. These are in the Javadi Hills. There are rock houses that still exist. They call huts. You know, it's not really clear, but I believe these are atop a mountain. And they're very interesting. People think that people of the Stone Age who were hunter-gatherers used to live in these caves. But if you look at them and you consider how high they are on these mountains, it would be like we're talking about 9 kilometers up to get to where these things are.
Are you implying that dragons were using them, flying in and out of them?
I don't know. Something slithering potentially.
Right.
Whatever these things were, the claim is that these are obviously Stone Age huts where people lived, but it's very difficult to crouch into them. Praveen Mohan tells this story too, that the villagers in these areas that he talked to, they tell a very different story. They say that they were beings that came from the sky. They were short and they helped civilize humans. And after they vanished, at the bottom of these mountains, the local temples all have record of this, and they have like Nagas all over the temples. Interesting that these huts are there, and who would have lived in these huts? There is a place in northeast India called Nagaland.
Is that like an amusement park?
No, it's like a state. It's like a state called Nagaland.
A state? And, oh, okay, got it. I thought it was like Disneyland or something.
No. Yeah, I mean,
got Naga stuff.
Yeah, no, this is an actual like part of the country called Nagaland, and they believe that they descended from the Nagas. It gets weirder, however, because if you start looking at a deeper culture here, there was in ancient Buddhist culture a bodhisattva who is considered the second most prominent figure in Buddhism, aside from Sakyamuni Buddha himself, who was 500 BC, right?
Right.
Nagarjuna is his name. Bodhisattva Nagarjuna. Naga is in the name. But one of the other significant things, too, that he ended up bringing in was the idea of tantric practices. You know, tantric practices being, you know, more secret practices that are, you could say, sexual in orientation. Now, a lot of people are using these practices and they don't understand them at all. That's not what we're talking about, right? Like this kind of sexy term, like, oh, tantric, whatever. Practices like, and you have like,
oh, it's way beyond that. Way beyond that.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a cultivation method that we have no way of understanding, right? Because we're not even in the state to understand those things, right? Nagarjuna, after renouncing his worldly life and being initiated into the Buddhist Sangha, he studied Mahayana texts on the Snow Mountain. He went to and obtained more important Mahayana scriptures from the palace of the Nagas under the sea, and won the mind and support of the king of the Satavahana dynasty. These sources also say that he settled in South India until his last days of his life, and he had a long life lasting several hundred years. What's strange is the palace of the Nagas under the sea did these things. Were they here on Earth for a long time, and then now they're hiding under the sea? And I think another strange thing is that the beings that Nagarjuna was communicating with, they called serpent-like or even fish-like. So you could...
Oh, yeah.
You could easily mistake that if you saw it in the ocean or in the sea for, what, a mermaid?
Right.
Which right. is...
Well, isn't that the case? A lot of these stories... What about the golden child, the golden boy, Eddie Murphy?
Did you watch that movie?
Yeah, I saw it. Oh, man.
It's good, right?
It's a good movie, yeah. Oh, my gosh. But anyway, it's like the depiction of the Naga female is that head on the serpentine body, right, moving around. And that, yeah, is easily translated into a mermaid. Very interesting and weird that they are, you know, the legends have them under the sea, which is another curiosity. So... Man, you know, this is like literally like where mythology and reality collide. Like this is the crazy part of all this, because obviously like in our current state of mind and reality, we don't perceive those things to be real. We don't think those things are real. But there was a certain time in history where that type of information or referencing to natural events stopped. It stopped, right? And there's a reason for that.
academia, Western academia?
Well, it's kind of like we've moved so far away from that in time,
yeah,
time distance, that we've begun to build a different attitude about physical reality. And so the idea of physical reality being a very specific, certain set way at this point in time doesn't include what actually happened in the past, because it is science-based now, and it became more gradually more and more science-based and repressive on things that happened in the past. And so that stuff was just weeded out. Right, it's kind of like how the idea of giants, the knowledge, the evidence of giants, was worked on from a psychological standpoint during the 1920s, very, very effectively, to pull it out of the mind of future generations, so that at this point, even in the face of evidence, people will just laugh at the notion of a giant. Right. Right. So it's that kind of thing. Now, when you get to the stuff from the deep past, like Naga and whatnot, it's like, it was a longer period of time in order for that stuff to leave. And part of it has to do with the changes that occurred on the Earth way back when, and why, yes, these things were real things. We haven't gotten to that yet, but yes, these were real things. Why they were here, why they left, or why they disappeared from human consciousness.
Yeah, and the giant example you just gave is so good, because like, how did we go from Abraham Lincoln openly mentioning giants and right. the giants they found in the upper part of the United States to it being the laughing stock of the US or the world even now, where there's hard evidence of these things?
In order to kill any of those arguments that people bring up, especially around remote viewing, because I hear it a lot, where a person who doesn't know anything about it will automatically cite the CIA said it didn't work. And then, you know, you wait a week or so, and you go back and ask them, man, do you trust the government? Do you trust the CIA? And I go, no, absolutely not. I don't trust them. Yeah, but last week you just said, you know, the CIA said, as if they're telling you the truth about anything.
And there's been so much propaganda against it, like The Men Who Stare at Goats, which was just like a ridiculous, ridiculous movie, painting it as like some crazy people experimenting with LSD, essentially, that were, you know, hallucinating.
Right, exactly.
which is totally inaccurate. It was just annoying.
Yeah, back then when that movie was being developed, the producer, the one developing it, contacted my team to talk to us about like remote viewing and stuff. We just stayed away from it because we felt that it was not going to be good. Just bringing all the ex-military remote viewers in, saying how it worked, what they did, how cool it was, et cetera, et cetera. America's psychic spies, super sexy. The ex-military always said it worked. This is controlled opposition.
Oh, totally.
It's to create the formation of a black hole to suck you into it, into the argument of either side, to keep you not thinking about something else.
We'll have to get into that sometime. But what I want to know right now, John, is I want you to hit me with, was your remote viewing data on the Nagas where they are now?
Man, like, where do you even start with this? There was a time here on this rock that we live on, currently, at least I think it's that, you never know, where there had been major catastrophes and resets of civilization, where things shifted, things changed. And when you get into ancient Indian culture, they talk about something called the yugas, the transitions between ages, which last 12,000-ish years or so. In those transition zones, we have typically a major cataclysm. We can find geologic records from 12,000 years ago that do talk about some major cataclysm that happened on this planet. It's the Younger Dryas area. this is a known, right? This is not a conspiracy. Something happened because of temperature fluctuations that they've seen in ice cores that were so extreme and so fast. That would have decimated the planet, right? When we remote view this stuff, before that time, we have like civilizations, beings, people who are in a more of an advanced state than we are now, technologically, spiritually. So
like Atlantis kind of stuff.
Atlantis kind of stuff, right? And then when that cataclysm occurred, after that, what we see with remote viewing data is that you had different types of, I would say, civilization builder beings or cultures come in to help pick the pieces back up and move things forward once again. This gets into a time when cultures, the Egyptians and some of the South American, Central American cultures were squeezing their heads to make them elongated. The rulers were doing that because once again, we see that there was some other culture, extra-dimensional space, that is interacting and trying to move culture forward again, right? And that's why those people were doing that, because they wanted to emulate them, or they had the blood of them in their body, half human, half them. Mm-hmm. Then we have the idea of the Nephilim, the giants. When we had remote viewed that, it was literally they're trying to escape their dying planet, in a sense, in part, and they're also coming here because it's a new world.
Christians assume they were referring to giants, but actually, in the Bible, in multiple cases, it was saying that these gods came down, or these angels, fallen angels, whatever you want to call them, came down and started mating with humans, and they created the champions of old. Now, champions of
right,
old,
right.
That could mean Achilles. I mean, that could mean Hercules. That doesn't necessarily mean a giant, but there were definitely weird giant things running around on the planet, like cyclopses and stuff.
Again, but what we're falling into here is the same story with the Nagas, right? Where the Nagas, a human king, would marry a Naga princess, right? That was a Naga. And then they would have offspring that would be human Naga, right? And so you find a lot of these stories. And you find, like, across the board in lots of different cultures, you have the marriage between some type of higher deity or some kind of different looking space race, perhaps, mating with humans to create new offspring. This is literally that period after the destruction, just like before and after the destruction that happened on this planet, in order to create civilization anew. Specifically, they were involved in that. They were involved in the reseeding, involved in the culture building on this planet, like what you find with the rulers in Egypt that claimed some divine right. You find it in South and Central America. You find it in every culture. These stories were representing the culture builders and what they were and what they look like, right? Just because humans now think of them as being primitive peoples and don't really know how to describe things except through that lens, natural phenomena through that lens, is mistaken. It's mistaken because every time we look at it, we see the same thing. I mean, even when you go into some of the ancient Vedic texts that talk about Dwarka, Krishna, the blue being, yes, blue god, ruling over Dwarka since forever, basically, they said that was just, you know, mythological story. It doesn't exist and that never happened. Yet Dwarka has been found off the coast that matches the story.
Well, yeah. In that same place, the water receded at some point, and there was all kinds of crazy stuff found on the shore after it had receded that even alluded to certain temples that were reportedly on Dwarka.
Right, exactly. I mean,
crazy stuff.
Yeah, and so in looking at that with remote viewing, we see that the blue being, was there in that time period. And that was before the catastrophic flood. That was before it. So you had a period of time where you had beings from off world who were living here, ruling, interacting, et cetera, et cetera. And so when you get into these ancient Vedic texts, they get really, really interesting because most people will take them as being, well, just mythology, and they're, you know, just mixing things up because they're super primitive. You know, they don't know. They just don't know what they're doing. It's not like that. It's not true. And so it's really interesting to read those things from the perspective of these being real, right? Of these things actually truly did happen, because you learn a lot more, and then you could task on it with remote viewing, and it turns out, yes, these things are real things, and the world was much different back then. You know, when you get into the Naga, it's like they came, they intermingled. And these stories between the creating offspring, you know, the rulers, the Naga rulers and whatnot. Yes, I mean, they were in that position. But so what we saw with them was that they were like quasi-spiritual, but third dimensional, in and out of dimensional realm kind of thing, our dimensional realm. And they could manifest themselves here, be here as physical humans. And they seem to be some kind of aspect or contingent that's related to dragons. If you read some of the ancient texts, some of the old stories, quite often, more often than not, probably across the board, the humans and the Nagas, especially when they were married, so the human population didn't necessarily like the Nagas, right? The humans who were under the rule would become, they wouldn't like the Naga individual because that individual was too different from them or had aspects that were way more metaphysical than what they had. And so there would be this idea of jealousy, right? And what's curious here is that when we looked into the giants, when we looked into the idea of the Nephilim, there were contingents of them who had the same experience with humans, where humans got really testy about them, even if there was, you know, sort of this like okay back and forth or good back and forth and friendliness, humans would eventually get testy with them and start fighting with them. And with the regard to the giants, we saw them break up into contingents, and some decided to stay above ground and just like eat humans and just do what they wanted to do. Some went underground to just get away from it all. Just totally get away from it all. And that is literally what we saw with the Nagas. They basically got just a bad taste in their mouth from the humans that they decided that they were going to go and still be in the realm, but like not even interact with humans anymore, just go away from them. And, you know, underground, we get the idea of underground, under the surface, et cetera, where they're still around if you are non-combative and pretty clean of spirit and big-hearted, open-hearted, you can form a connection point with them. And that's probably why the Buddhists have that connection point, right? And most likely a back and forth.
Yeah, because they're like a peaceful group of, people that have this open mind and that are just looking for self-improvement and awareness.
Exactly. Right. And so that's what we've seen. So like in some of the remote viewing around this, you get the paraphysical presence of them coming through, wanting to connect in a way that is through the heart, if the heart's open. Otherwise, if it's not open, you're not even going to be able to engage. You just won't be able to engage because of what happened in the past, had just gotten a bad taste in their mouth and are just like humans.
A very similar thing happened with Akhenaten, for instance, in Egypt. This was this elongated skull being that somehow became a pharaoh in Egypt and went from, you're talking about hundreds of years of them worshiping the same gods, to him just being like, hey, let's just go ahead and change our entire culture around while I'm ruling, and we'll just worship this sun god called Aten. Right. And so now you see all these hieroglyphics being put up of this like disc in the sky, which if this dude was an alien, it'd be very easy for this disc to come down at any point that this guy wants to make a point. And everyone's like, ah, crap, there's a disc in the sky. Better worship this thing, whatever it is. Right. And in the hieroglyphics, this guy he's a weird shaped body, big elongated skull. His wife's got an elongated skull. His kids are depicted with elongated skulls, like very elongated skulls, which was not a thing really previous to that. The elite in Egypt were very upset that he changed the culture. They were talking smack about it all the time till eventually rebellion started to happen because they started to see something that they knew was not native to their culture. You know, if what I'm seeing is true, this guy was some kind of extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional being that came in. People got upset and, you know, they did what they did. But humans are tribal. You don't easily change their entire culture like that, especially if they're a devout. In Chinese culture, they believe that they were their bodies, that their race was created by a goddess named Nuwa, also kind of pronounced Nugua, like depending on how you pronounce it, which is very close to Naga. This goddess who created the Chinese race was said to have the head of a female and the body of a serpent. All of the emperors in China believe they descended from dragons.
Well, but here's it. You know, when they did.
Did they just reincarnate down? Like, I was a dragon here. I'm coming down in this body, in this human body. Or are we talking about like direct?
So what we're talking about are different. So when the Earth went through the cataclysmic change, and then the culture has to renew itself, there's like different swaths of the Earth being cut between different culture builders. For that area, it was more along the lines of a being that looked like that. So when you have that idea of intermingling blood with these creatures or beings and creating new offspring, it's a physical thing. It isn't like across the board as one single. Now, you may have had like somebody overseeing the genetic line, and then kind of pulling together these different cultures to come in and help with that. And giving them certain sections, certain areas of the earth in order to work it. You got Quetzalcoatl, you've got maybe some of the Greek gods from past, further, who knows? I mean, you've got all these different seeding groups that came in probably under one purpose. But listen to this. Like, so what do we have today? So what are our modern myths today? Not that we have those. We have what people talk about, which is called the conspiracy. These types of things now aren't myths, they're conspiracy, right? And what do we have in the conspiracy world? We have what people talk about is a negative side and then a positive aspect. There's a whole positive side. We've got the darker ones who try to rule over societies and whatnot and get
and
use out of it.
And humans and stuff.
Right. And then we have ones who are supposedly a higher vibration that people have described as being very dragon-like, but yet are physical. And they've got glands, basically, that can chemically create flame, fire, which takes us back to the dragon, right? So we've got these modern stories of like turns into aliens of these beings who kind of sound a little bit like these ones from the past as well. Now with the Naga, it's like some kind of aspect of that. They have an aspect of that. They have an aspect of this sort of dragon, if you want to call it alpha draconian or whatever thing, but then they're slightly different. So it's like almost like genetically related, but not exactly the same thing, right? And I think like what we see with the data is that they were like given that area. They were given part of those areas, right? Along with
You're
other
talking about
beings.
Southeast
back,
Asia.
Way back when, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just very bizarre. I didn't expect actually some of the stuff that occurred in this podcast for it to go there. The history of the world is just so weird, like confusing even, because there's so many different things going on. And then you've got these like this anomalous group of serpent beings that are everywhere, seemingly.
Right. Well, I mean, what if angels are dragons? Because you've got the wings, You've got all that stuff. And if you literally go back to the Old Testament, there are so many things that potentially point to this idea of dragons. Like, so what if they were? Yeah, I know it's like sacrilege, but it's well, literally they, just like thinking about it. Like, what if it was?
One thing humans need to admit is that they don't understand things at those higher dimensional planes. They don't.
Right.
So if they were shapeshifters too, you're talking about beings that could potentially appear however you needed them to appear. And there's also so many different beings. I mean, in ancient Indian culture and in Southeast Asia, there is a being called Garuda, who was supposedly the, I guess you could say, opposite of the Naga.
The Garuda would eat the Naga. We've looked deeply into Garuda, very fascinating being, and it is a real thing. It is a real thing.
I believe
it. Yeah, yeah. And it would fight snakes, fight the Naga. Yeah. The whole battle between them, like ongoing, I think Anton Parks, who is a researcher of all this stuff, he reads Sumerian tablets, talks about this stuff. And so we've taken a lot of his material and dug into it with remote viewing and been able to craft, like, broaden the stories around some of this stuff and understand the reality.
Those Sumerian tablets, these, or whatever you want to call them, Anunnaki, I don't know. They would always be depicted as either human beard wings, or it would be bird-like creature, which Garuda was. And they were holding the pine cone with a little genetic purse or whatever it was. And what if the Naga and these guys were going at it all the time?
They were. They were. Absolutely, they were. Yeah. It's just mind-blowing, like when you start going into the history and the crazy stories that come out through history. Obviously, some of them don't pan out when we remote view them. They just no, this was literally some culture trying to describe some natural phenomena. But then more than that, they do pan out. They do pan out, and they get really extensive in where they go and like how far they go, how deep they go, and where in the universe they start to go. Especially back then. Like back then, people knew. It's like people knew of the giants here in the United States in the early 1900s. Back then, well, yeah, they knew that there were other space cultures interacting and ruling over humans. I mean, it was just a common thing.
To back that up a little bit, you were talking about Dwarka, right? And this is where apparently, this is what it's called, right?
Dwarka.
This is also where Krishna was apparently had his entire civilization. And Krishna was he a god? I'm not sure.
There's a difference. Okay, so like when you get into the Elohim, that is God, more like the builders, culture builders. But, you know, people really try to put everything in one basket. And if you say that Krishna was God, then that just like turns half the other country into like, no, that's heresy, right? So you have these beings that were higher vibrational, and what we see with remote viewing, that weren't, everybody's God, but it's like they were not the God, the All Father or whatever, right? It's all of reality.
Like a human seeing an angel and then being like, oh, this is higher. It's like, you don't know what to call it. So you're like, it's a god or it's...
You know, Christianity started out, well, and it truly still is, henotheistic. Henotheistic is deciding to worship one god out of many. It's not monotheistic, it's henotheistic. And that's how it started. Because if you read the Old Testament, you immediately see that it's stated there are more than one God, and one God should only be followed. So it's always been that way. It's just that, again, forgetting this stuff and not wanting to see it or read it exactly as it is.
I also think some of that, like, you know, we've had some shows on this where some of it was done on purpose to keep some of this information away from Christians, to simplify things so that they didn't get confused when it wasn't those people's right to do that.
But, I mean, as far as Krishna goes, though, we see Krishna as we've run into this. So like there's this specific place that we've remote viewed around the star Vega. There are planets around the star Vega. And we've gone extensively into remote viewing what's there. What we found there when we remote viewed it were blue beings that were very, very, very Hindu-like, how Hindus represent them. I mean, very. Some of them had multiple arms, and they were very tall and big, right? These would be akin to the Krishna-type being that was here at that time, just before the cataclysm, and was ruling Dwarka. And when we remote viewed that being ruling, we were getting a blue being, right? We were getting a blue being that left just before the cataclysm struck to go back, to go wherever it came from, probably back there is my guess, but I'm sure they're spread out across the universe.
Well, it was said that how Krishna died was basically he had his whole, you know, city set up by that, the water, and that there was another competing being who came over on a flying chariot and just started laying waste to the city until, you know, Krishna actually ended up dying.
I think that was after Krishna left. Wasn't that after?
I thought he died because of this attack.
Yeah, I don't know if he did.
I could be wrong, you know, yeah. But anyway, point is, like, they're talking about flying chariots in their ancient texts, and we're like, ah, they're crazy, you know, like...
Place in India that has immense amount of radiation, way above normal. And then part of the surface where there was an old village, like really, really old, that they found buried under the sand, was glassed. This old village, part of this old village was glass, is been dated to the time around when the Mahabharata took place. And the Mahabharata depicts an ancient battle between these two family clans in ancient India. And a lot of people take that, a huge part of that as being mythology, but like that village was glassed. And when we remote viewed what glassed that village, I mean, you're talking about a village that was dated to that time frame. When we remote viewed what happened, it was a nuclear weapon, part of the Mahabharata battle. So this is what's so astounding to me and why it's actually so exciting. Because when we begin to verify these instances in these ancient texts, where everybody says it's fake, except for some real diehard people, we see that it's real. You start to look at them completely differently. You start to look at them, you start to look at any ancient text and go, oh, that's interesting. That's related to this over in India. And it's like referencing the same thing from South America. And so these things were over here and they were over there because we already verified it. Not all of it's literal, but when you begin to understand what's literal, it creates this huge picture of reality that goes beyond what most people know.
Not shockingly, we weren't even able to get into the Padmanabhaswamy temple yet. So I think in part two of this episode, we're going to go into the Padmanabhaswamy temple and what's actually in that thing. Riches, is there something more mysterious? We're talking about a temple that has a number of vaults. I think six have been opened, and one of them has no hinges, no anything. It's just a door to an unknown area where they say if you try to open these doors without the actual proper, I guess you could say, spell, you will incur the wrath of the gods. Some of them believe that it would actually cause the apocalypse just by opening up these doors. And so in the next episode, we're going to go further into this Naga conversation and get into the Padmanabhaswamy temple and what is actually going on with that thing. So if you're interested in that, if you like this episode, of course, please like the episode. Let us know what you think in the comments below. Let us know if we missed anything or what you thought about this conversation. And we'll try to get back to you. And John, yeah, thanks so much for being here. And for those of you at home, we hope you guys thought that this episode was as out of this world as we did.